It took 1,000 generations for our species to rise, but gathering and hunting was no way to get by. We yearned to burn more than dung and sticks. Then Satan came along and said, hey, try lighting this. He opened up the ground and showed us coal and oil. He said, come liberate some carbon, it'll make your blood boil. Liberated carbon, it'll spin your wheels. Liberated carbon, it'll nuke your meals. Liberated carbon, it'll turn your night to day.
Welcome back to our Earth Day edition of Eco Talk, talking with Andrew Revkin, New York Times reporter, and also author of a book I highly recommend for the entire family called The North Pole Was Here, Puzzles and Perils at the Top of the World. What do you mean by puzzles?
The Arctic has always been a puzzle to us. It's hard. I did a lot of research on our history, the history of the idea of the Arctic. It goes back thousands of years. The Chinese had first figured out about magnetic north. They had compass needles and they pointed north, but no one had been there. No one. It was hard to get there. As in the 1800s, there was this era of exploration where everyone tried to get to the Arctic, and most of them died, frozen, died, and had awful times. The ones who survived. So it's always been a puzzle. And then even as late as the mid 1800s, there was the idea that there was an open polar sea. That if you got past all that fringing, daunting ice, there was this nice, warm place. Maybe. And now, of course, it may be that we're actually transforming it into an open sea by these the buildup of greenhouse gases. So it's strange that we're going back to the legendary future in a way.
What kind of wildlife did you see up there?
None. It's a sterile place for the most part. It's a frozen landscape, seascape. For 3 days we were there, the one bit of wildlife I saw was one seal that briefly popped its head up through an opening in the ice.
A single seal?
A single ice seal. And it was right. It was one of these meditative moments where I was just sitting there listening to the sounds of nothing, the wind and the sound of the crunching ice. And then this little head popped up and looked at me and then disappeared. And what was interesting about that, as I relay in the book, where there are seals, there are polar bears. Even at the center of the Arctic Ocean, right at the North Pole, polar bears get that far out. And so you have a little prickly sensation that, you know, for a polar bear, they look so cute and cuddly in pictures, but they all we are to them is lunch. And
really?
So it made you want to get back to the camp in a hurry.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Fiery secrets in the Arctic depths. Fire?
Well, the ocean floor 2.5 miles below that ice is just like any other ocean. They've recently discovered through doing these submarine explorations that there is volcanic activity underneath that frozen north, and scientists are probing those secrets as well.
You took a lot of the pictures, and they're beautiful color photographs. You take this one?
I did not take the picture of the polar bear looking at the beluga whale going, oh, I'd like to eat you.
I was going to say, how long did you wait for that moment?
No, that's a great shot. And the book, again, because it's aimed at everyone, it's I think even elected officials might be able to comprehend climate change once
maybe
they
finish
this.
Maybe our president. He doesn't read, that's right.
Oh, well, there are lots of pictures and graphical aids.
He would probably like, well, I don't want to put this book down. It's a fabulous piece of work. And it does look accessible and approachable and interesting, really interesting.
It's an incredible place. And it's, again, to have something that big in our minds. The Arctic has always been sort of a feature, even a feature of our legendary landscape where Santa Claus goes. And because no one can get there, it's a very convenient place to stash Santa Claus in the summer. But now, again, if there's a blue ocean up there, it might be harder for him to hang out in the summertime.
And how are kids receiving this book? I mean, I imagine it's older children mostly.
It's written in a way that I think tells the broader story of climate change through this adventure of the climate scientists, who they're kind of the unsung heroes in all of this. They go out there and get this. It's grunt work of science. This is not Nobel Prize winning stuff.
Not glamorous.
No, but it's very hard, and they're determined to help clarify this picture beyond what's already known, which is a lot.
And you've been bringing this picture of global warming into view for many New York Times readers. What has it been like in terms of management? Are they really sensing that this is a huge story and giving you plenty of room to go with it? And are they assigning other reporters to this environmental beat?
Yeah, there's more. This year we're doing a big package of stories on the energy challenge. In other words, whatever we do about climate is going to be really about energy, because right now the gases are essentially an unavoidable byproduct of economic activity. You have to burn something to run machines and to generate electricity for the most part. And as India and China and Mexico get even into higher gear, you're going to see more of that. So it's a technology story in the end, and it's a challenge to think about how we're going to find new ways to empower human life on Earth. And there's 2 billion people still right now who cook their daily meals on wood or dung fires. And we can't expect that to just, well, they can't do that, but they can't have our conveniences either. So something has to happen.
Of course, we have the largest global footprint per capita in America.
For sure.
With 4% of the world's population using 25% of the resources and creating that much waste. What would you advise Americans to do who are concerned about this huge, overarching, mother of all environmental challenges issue, of course, global warming or climate crisis, as Mark Kurtzgaard is saying we should call it?
Mm-hmm. It's I do think it's important to keep in mind that some people have tried to sort of torque the issue and make it into a real-time crisis, meaning the things you're seeing in the world today are our fault, and it's premature to do that.
Well, the green lining may be that it did get people to pay attention.
Right, for the moment. But there's variability out there, and if we build some case for action based on things that are happening now, and those things turn around for a while, then there goes your whole
argument.
But
between the melting ice sheets and caps and, you know, this record hurricane season and, you know, droughts in the Brazilian rainforest, there's a lot of things going on. It's not just the storms.
Right, but none of those things can be attributed directly to the buildup of greenhouse gases.
Definitely, but it could be, right?
Oh, sure, yeah, but there's been some hype lately. The media, okay. I think, have gotten it, they got it wrong the other way for many years, and now they're getting it wrong.
That's pretty typical. We're a nation of extremes.
Right.
Thank you so much, Andrew Revkin. Good luck with the book. I highly recommend it. For Earth Day, go out and buy it. The North Pole was here. We'll be right back.
Thanks.